Hey, the It's Time for Coffee podcast is powered by the Converge Podcast Network. Hey friends, it's time for coffee, and I'm your friend and host, Jeanette. I'm so glad that you're here today. I hope you know by just pressing play on that podcast app, you have a friend with you. My hope is that as you listen, you will know that you are heard, valued, loved, and not alone no matter what stage of life you're in. I hope that you're subscribed so you never miss an episode, and it would mean the world to me if you left a rating or review. I'm so glad you're here, and I cannot wait to introduce you to this week's guest. For all our American friends, I want to say happy Thanksgiving. I hope this Thanksgiving finds you full of hope and thankfulness. I know that this year is so strange and weird and probably lonely for some of us, but I just want to say that I'm so thankful for you. I'm thankful that you continue to put on those AirPods or put on some headphones, however you do it. I'm thankful you tune in every week. I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for your friendship. And I'm thankful that we get to continue to do this together. So from a little cabin in the woods in Colorado, I just want to say happy Thanksgiving from me to you. Hey, I'm so glad to be sitting down with one of my sweet real life friends, Holly Hayes, today. Holly is the CEO of The Sanctuary Project, a jewelry company that employs women who are survivors of sex trafficking. Holly spent some time telling us her story, and let me tell you, God has used every ounce of Holly's story for His good. It's incredible and so encouraging. As we're spending the next few weeks getting ready for Christmas shopping, I really want to encourage you to shop Sanctuary Project on Sanctuary Project's website or Target.com. Y'all, Target.com. It's so cool. Their pieces are beautiful, and I love that they are continuing to empower women with such purpose. I have some super cute gold hoops that I got from Sanctuary Project just a few weeks ago. They're timeless, yet trendy, and so pretty. I know that you can find some gifts for just about any woman on your list in this collection. Just check out Sanctuary Project at Target.com. I cannot wait for you to hear Holly's heart. So friend, grab a cup, fill it up with whatever you want, and let's dive in. Hey y'all, I'm so excited to be sitting down with my sweet, in real life friend. And I'm actually at her house.
And we're in real life.
We are in real life. Oh my gosh.
This is so nice.
So nice.
I made her do this. I made her drive up to me. She's like, what, an hour and away?
Yeah,
hour
just
and a half away or something.
Not even an hour.
Oh,
just an
good.
Hour. Yeah. It was so, it was a beautiful drive out here. She lives on a farm just outside of Austin. It is the best. I don't do in-person interviews very often unless I know the person.
Did you come just to see my cows or did you want to see me and hug me?
See you and hug you for sure.
See you and hug your cows.
And then I definitely need to see the cows later. So I'm here with Holly Hayes. We are so excited to be sitting down. We're going to talk about a plethora of things. Holly has an amazing story that is going to just draw you closer to the Lord. And it's exactly what it's done for you is drawn you to the Lord, Holly. Mm-hmm. And I know that in the fruit of your life blossoms all over everybody who meets you. And I just love that about you. So, Holly, hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for hanging out with me. This is such a joy. We met at Micah May's Trailblazers retreat, mm-hmm. and I had known of you from other podcasts. And when you walked in, I was like, oh, I know her. Phew. I was afraid to be in a room of strangers.
But I didn't know you.
Well, I just told you we were friends at that point.
I know. It was fun. I was like, okay, this girl is bold. She was like, oh my gosh, we're going to be besties. And I was like, I'm in. I'm here for it.
And we actually haven't seen each other since, but yeah. It doesn't feel like that.
Well, because we've kept in touch, which I love.
I know. And you're just you're one of my very favorites. So, Holly, thank you again for being here. What's in your cup? We have to do the whole thing without just gushing over one another.
Well, I have a little espresso bar, so we just went and made some stuff. Mm-hmm. So I did a shot of espresso. I have an espresso machine, which I fell in love with when I lived in Europe. Everyone has those there. And so we have an espresso machine, and I did a shot of espresso and then some oat milk. But I watered it down. I did a shot and a half, and I shouldn't have. You know when you push the button again?
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that. So I wish I'd just done the shot and the oat milk. But it's an oat milk latte.
And I have just an Americano with a little bit of caramel almond milk creamer.
Yeah.
These coffees are delicious. And what a sweet thing that we were able to go get coffee. Actually, have coffee together.
I know. Oh. This is a joy.
It's my dream come true.
Is yours good?
Oh, it's delicious.
Okay, good.
It's so good.
Awesome.
So good. Okay. When you're out and about, because we have really cute coffee shops over on this side of town, into town.
Yeah.
What do you get for coffee when you're out?
So it depends. I love an oat milk latte. Mm-hmm. I always love that. If it's afternoon, I like to do a chai. I love like chai lattes. Yeah. So Summer Moon is like our favorite local spot here in Austin. And there they have this horchata chai, and that's my favorite thing. It's so good.
I haven't had that there.
Oh, after this, we're going to go get one because you need to have this.
Yeah, it's amazing. Okay. I sat and worked at Summer Moon in San Marcos a couple weeks ago and just loved it.
It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. I had their, I think I had an oat milk lavender latte.
Ooh, that sounds perfect.
That's really good. Okay. So, Holly, I know your story, and your story has been written out in a book called...
From Basement to Sanctuary.
I was going to say Sanctuary Project. I was like, that's wrong.
Yeah.
A new sanctuary.
Yeah.
From Basement to Sanctuary. And tell us just a little bit about your story, and then we're going to get into your latest and greatest endeavor, which has been Sanctuary Project.
Yeah. So I didn't grow up in a family of faith at all. I grew up in a real secular home. Both my parents were college professors, and so that was kind of where I got my sense of identity, was being in an intellectual family, being a good student. I was a good kid, I would say, pretty much growing up, but there was some sexual abuse in my childhood that set me down a path of a lot of anxiety and fear and depression from a very, very young age. When I was 14, I discovered what I thought was going to be the cure to that anxiety and depression, which was alcohol and drugs. Mm-hmm. And it worked for about an hour. And, you know, when I had my first sip of alcohol, I thought, okay, I can do life now. Like, this is going to be my solution. And I ended up getting drunk very quickly and then trying drugs for the first time that night, too. And then it spiraled downhill really fast once I combined the two. And I ended up having, I guess you would say, sexual encounters with three different men that very first night. Wow. And, you know, that was not me making those decisions. And I think that immediately the shame set in, and that set me down this whole other life path where I thought, okay, I'm this girl now. Mm-hmm. I'm the girl who's drunk and hooking up with guys and, you know, using drugs and all of these things that I had never been before. And so that spiraled downhill really quickly for me. And by the time I was 15, I was drinking and using drugs every day.
Wow.
And then by 16, I'd actually dropped out of high school and got into my first abusive relationship with someone who was my drug dealer, and had my first of 5 abortions that year. And then by 18, I was getting arrested all the time and got my first job as a sex worker. I started dancing in a club and got my first taste of what that kind of exploitation looked like and felt like. I kept getting drunk and high and not showing up for work, so I ended up losing my job as a stripper after a short time, and went from there to selling drugs myself, which I was actually quite good at. I was a very successful drug dealer.
I always say, it's because you're so nice.
Well, that, you know, that helped. I provided excellent customer service, which a lot of drug dealers don't, you know? And so
surprising.
I think I made people feel safe and comfortable, and I actually returned their pages. At this point, it was pagers, right? And so I would get a page, and I would call them back, and I understood margins, and I understood business, and I think those things were sort of innate in me, and it's funny to see how I use it today, which we can circle back to when we talk about that, but then I had a run-in with the law that kind of stopped that, and I just kept getting kind of worse and worse. And at 19, I met the man who became my trafficker. Mm. And I was at a party, and he kind of spotted me from across the room and just immediately zeroed in on me, and I think could tell that I was insecure and leading with my sexuality and fearful and just a perfect candidate for exploitation. He developed a relationship with me, and about a month or two into that relationship, it became violent. I realized very quickly he had other women in his life. And about a year into the relationship, he encouraged me to stop paying the rent on the apartment I was subletting at the time, and I ended up getting kicked out, and he invited me to come live with him. And then as my debt started mounting to him, he suggested that he line up jobs for me to have sex with other men for money. And at the time, I never would have seen that as trafficking. I actually thought he was just my boyfriend and he was just helping me out. And I felt like I owed this to him because he'd been taking care of me. He'd been letting me live with him. He'd been giving me drugs. He'd been keeping me fed. And I felt beholden to him. And so it seemed like the right thing to do. But again, just like with the stripping, I kept getting drunk and high and not showing up for the jobs he lined up for me. And he ended up kicking me out. And I was homeless at that point. I was 21 years old and had failed at everything in life by that point. And I was on the floor of a public bathroom and I was watching my tears hit the floor. And three words fell out of my mouth. I said, "God, help me." And I'd never believed in God. I had no experience with God. But when I was at the end of myself, it was all I could think to say. And that very night, I ended up meeting someone who got me into a recovery program. And I have been safe and sober since that day. That's February 11th of 2001. So it'll be 20 years in February.
Oh my gosh, Holly.
Isn't that incredible? And yeah, just from that moment, was really gifted with this whole other life that I never could have imagined or dreamed of for myself. And it all began with that, that simple three-word prayer.
I love it. Did you have any trouble trusting the person who helped you find sobriety at that point?
I mean, one of my big character flaws was that I trusted men, so.
I guess so.
But I love that God used that, right? Yeah. I mean, I honestly think if God had sent a woman to, you know, to bring me into a recovery community or program, I probably would not have trusted her.
Really?
But God is so, he's so all-knowing, right? Yeah. And he knew exactly what I needed. And I actually probably would have trusted a man more in that moment. I think I'd felt so isolated from other women because of the life I was living.
Right. There's a competition.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, definitely my trafficker set up that sense of competition because he was always hitting on anyone around us. And anytime I had a friend who was a girl, he would try to sleep with them. And so, women were definitely competition. And also, women seemed better at life than I was. Other women seemed to be able to, like, care for themselves with dignity. And they seemed to be able to make choices about who they gave their body to. And somehow I couldn't. And, you know, they could control how much they drank and did drugs, and I couldn't. And so I think I always looked at other women and was like, I just wish I could be like you. I wish I had some sense of self-control or dignity.
Yeah. I just am struck by your story by a couple of things. One night in your childhood changed your life for that long, and then one night changed your life forever.
I love that. No one's ever noticed that before, pointed that out to me, but you're right.
It's so crazy to me. And it's just, it's God's goodness in the sense that you were able to have that rapid turnaround of, like, now it's almost 20 years of sobriety. That's amazing.
It's pretty special.
So special. And I think that we live in such a mommy wine culture now, like the mommy juice and all of this, that like the sobriety, like, really, really matters. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's such a beautiful thing that you just kind of, like, I love that you said, like, you, the word dignified came out of your mouth. And I was like, that's how I would explain you to people.
Aww, that's
you're so kind. You're so dignified. You're so lovely that, like, when you said other people just knew how to do it better, and I was like, oh my gosh, Holly, no, like, you are such a dignified, loving woman, and, like, the fact that you didn't see that and that you kind of had given yourself away to that, like, well, I just can't, then is 180, is it 180? It's just different.
Yeah.
Like, it's a big turn.
It's true. I mean, today I do consider myself a woman of dignity, and I get to be this example to so many other women, right? And I've made choices for my life for the last 20 years. Alcohol, drugs have not made those choices for me.
Yeah.
I got to make the choice to be sexually pure until my wedding night with my husband, which was amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I was super nervous, and I made him drink a whole bottle of champagne because I was so nervous, but...
You do this for me.
Seriously, like, I literally was like, I'm really nervous. Will you have more champagne? But that, being able to make that choice and say, I get to choose what I do with my body. I get to choose how I show up in this world. I get to choose who I'm friends with. I get to choose my behavior. I get to choose how I encourage or mentor other women. It's such a gift. It's such a gift today. And I don't take it for granted because there were so many years of feeling like alcohol and drugs were making those choices for me.
Yeah. When you talk about your trafficker and how you were in a relationship with him, but he wasn't in a relationship with you, it sounds like.
I mean, he was not committed to me.
Right.
You know, he, but what's strange about it is he did make me feel like I was so special and I was so, I was his favorite. And, you know, but it was funny because then sometimes another woman would come around and she would think that I was the other woman and that she was the,
oh.
the main girlfriend, you know, and that he was cheating on her with me. And I was like, no, I'm the main girlfriend. You know, it was so weird.
That is so strange.
But he was so manipulative and had set up this dynamic with several people and was constantly pushing me away and pulling me in again. And there, I mean, abusers and narcissists are really good at making you feel really special in a moment. And then there's, but then you see the flip side all of a sudden and it's confusing and it leaves you wanting that thing where it's like, wait, but you made me feel so special. You made me feel more special than anyone ever had before. And so I would say that like he did that, you know, he made me feel more special and seen and understood and known than anyone ever had before. And yet then he would turn on me and, you know, and cheat on me right in front of me or, you know, or sell me to other men. And somehow make me feel like that was him showing me how much he valued me because he was saying your sexuality is so valuable that men will pay for you. It's so manipulative.
It's so manipulative. And it's like your brain almost can't compute it because it's so foreign. But we're also living in 2020 where sex trafficking and trafficking of human lives has become more and more talked about. How does that like... How does that make you feel that we're like, I feel like America's eyes are like, oh, this actually happens in America.
Yeah. I mean, I've been waiting for this moment, I think, for the last 10 years, I've been like, hey everyone, this is not an over there problem.
Right.
This is a here problem.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting because I think, this has been a season where more people are talking about it, where more people are realizing that this is an everywhere problem, that it's a here problem, that it's a now problem, that it's a black problem, a white problem, a Hispanic problem. This is not a certain people over there. This is us here now. I mean, I was a college student, you know, and
In California.
Yeah. And this is not where like, you know, you wouldn't put, this is not what society thinks of as trafficking, right? Like a lot of times people have this really sensationalized version of it in their minds that it's girls stolen from their window and then moved across borders and then chained to a bed in a brothel. And that happens, but it's extremely rare compared to the overwhelming majority of trafficking cases, which are by a known person that are not connected to a kidnapping. You know, this is a day and age where traffickers don't have to kidnap anyone because they can go onto social media and see who the girls are that are insecure and fearful and who the girls are that have bad relationships with their family or don't have friends around, and they can target them directly through their Snapchat or their Instagram, and they don't have to go out and kidnap anyone because they can lure kids in through social media.
Right. And it's as easy as just sweet DMs. Yeah. It reminds me, it's very different, I know, but it reminds me of how people will DM people about like, hey, oh my gosh, she looks so pretty, like other sex. So then there's that like slow fade into an emotional affair to a physical affair. It's like a slow fade.
And they build trust over time in those DMs. And yeah, and they're so smart. They know exactly who to target too.
Yep.
They're not gonna target girls who are in healthy, well-adjusted families and homes.
Right.
I think that's a message that I've seen out there where it's like, everyone should be afraid and don't post your kids online. And that's not the case at all.
Yeah.
Traffickers are targeting girls who are not supervised. They're targeting girls who are in the foster care system. They're targeting girls who are runaways or who have disconnected relationships with people who love them and are watching what they're doing.
Yeah.
If you're a loving parent who's watching what your children are doing, no one's going to try to steal your kid because there's easier targets out there, which is so sad, but it's true.
It's so true.
You're listening to the Converge Podcast Network. And now, a message from a network supporter.
Today's podcast is sponsored by Denison Ministries. Denison Ministries is a movement creating 7 million culture-changing Christians who are committed to carrying out the truth of the gospel to their sphere of influence through a variety of ways, which is why Denison Ministries is excited about sponsoring what God is up to on the It's Time for Coffee podcast. One of the cool ways Denison Ministry has helped Christians feel closer to God is through their First 15 devotional. First 15 is designed to help you spend the first 15 minutes of your day experiencing God through meaningful devotion, scripture, worship, and prayer. You can sign up and get the First 15 email devotional sent directly to your inbox at first15.org/subscribe or start your day off with a First 15 devotional podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. So now with the work that you do, you said you get to mentor and love on these women who work with Sanctuary Project. Can you tell us about Sanctuary Project? I actually have some beautiful Sanctuary Project earrings on right now.
They look so good.
Thank you. I really do love these. Like
They're so classic. Well, those are such a good
They're so classic. But also, I have like the thread through ones.
Oh, yeah.
The flowers. And Jesse said, those are so elegant.
Oh.
Is that so sweet of him? So I really have made a conscious decision to wear only things made by, like, this is made by a friend of mine, but like only made by my friends and that are helping other women all over the world.
Yeah.
And I know what you're doing is doing that. So that's like my little soapbox. Like,
I think it's so important. You know, I mean, everything we wear comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we can forget because we can look at the trends and say, oh, like, that's so cute and I want to shop there. But we have to think it through. Like, mm-hmm. where is our money going? Because where our money is going, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Ooh,
right?
I love that. Yeah.
And so where your money is going is what you're actually investing in yeah. terms of a world economy. And so if you're buying jewelry that's made by local women or by survivors, you're actually pouring into that economy, and not just with your money, but with your heart as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so Sanctuary Project is a nonprofit social enterprise. We have a jewelry line that employs and empowers women coming out of trafficking, violence, and addiction. And 100% of the women we employ are survivors. So everyone from me at the top as the CEO, our operations director, our program manager, our office manager, our peer support recovery specialist, all the girls in shipping and fulfillment, every single person on our team is a survivor, which creates such a special environment because there's no one who doesn't understand what we've all
right.
gone through. And it's this open, safe place for women to come in and be themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We say this is a place you can cry at work.
I love that.
We have a joke that Tuesdays are the days we cry. Yeah. So if someone cries on another day, we're like, so it's okay that you're crying, yeah. but just want to let you know it's a Wednesday and we're supposed to cry on Tuesdays.
You missed it, so you need to save it for next
yeah.
week.
But it's a joke because yeah. the truth is, like, anyone is free to break down at any moment, and she's going to be met with love and grace mm-hmm. and understanding. We're a place that employs women coming out of incarceration. Most of the women we employ have a criminal record, and most of the women I've actually met in Travis County Jail, which is our jail here in Austin's main county. And so I'm able to meet them and connect with them while they're inside Travis County and start mentoring them and really start to get them away from their traffickers often. At that point, they're still often connected to their trafficker, in a relationship with their trafficker. And we're able to enter into a relationship with them and say, is this relationship healthy? Is this what you want for your future? What would it look like to have a whole different life? While they're in Travis County, oftentimes they're meeting Jesus too, or maybe reconnecting with Jesus, and they're developing a faith, and we're able to walk alongside them in that and teach them about their value as a Christ follower, their value as a daughter of Christ. And then when they get out, we get to often help them get into a safe housing environment or a recovery house, and then they'll come and work with us at Sanctuary Project. So it's such a gift. It's been incredible to see so many lives transformed. We've provided more than 10,000 hours of employment at this point, and have employed 28 women now over the last 2.5 years.
That's amazing. And then how old is Sanctuary Project? Because I know we met like right at a year and a half ago. So
yeah.
It wasn't in its infancy, I don't think.
It was pretty young. So it was about a year old when we met.
Okay,
just
okay.
a little over a year old when we met. But we grew quite quickly. So we're 2.5 years now. It'll be 3 years in February.
Oh, awesome.
But we've grown quite quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen... Just from day one, we saw people really take to our work and our message and our jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the compassion jewelry lines have a specific look to them that's
yeah.
a little bit more like beaded and feathered
yeah.
and, you know, and has that kind of like...
Like more cultural flair
yeah,
almost. Like
exactly.
every country has its own cultural kind of...
Yeah. And I've kind of done that as well, but with America, right? So I've tried to make our jewelry look like what's on trend in America right
yeah.
now. So we have coin necklaces and chains and hoop earrings that you're
mm-hmm.
wearing right now, and things that sort of embody the American aesthetic. And because we're employing survivors here, it's really special because it says, like, this is our ethnic flair here. This is our cultural flair as Americans. We love this gold jewelry and dainty things and, you know, and chain necklaces and all these things that are on trend we've been able to adopt and bring into our line. And I think women have just really resonated with that, and being
yeah.
able to wear something that looks like what you would buy at Nordstrom or, you know, or at Kate Spade or one of those other brands, but it also is employing survivors.
I love that. I didn't even think about that. That, yeah, there's this cultural flair from all of these different beautiful companies,
yeah.
But you're saying, well, yeah, but like we're American, and yeah. So we're making like American flair. And I just love that. I love your new stained glass series.
Yeah.
Like they're just so flowy and just kind of like every time I see them on you, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna need to.
Is that what you're asking for Christmas?
Yes, it is.
That's good. That's a good one.
Will you tell Jesse?
Yeah, I'll tell Jesse.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, speaking of shopping for Christmas, you had something huge. I saw it on your Instagram, and I was like, hold on a second. This is giant news, and then I immediately, like, told you, I was like, please hold, I'm running to my computer. You guys are online at Target now, like,
yes.
Sanctuary Project online at Target. Tell us, how did that even happen? And that's such a huge thing.
Yeah, it's really incredible. I mean, I could never have dreamed, really, you know? I mean, like, I think when you start a company, you're like, I hope people like it, and I hope my little harebrained idea works.
Yes.
But to have Target pick us up is just beyond anything I could have ever asked or imagined. And, you know, and speaking of that, this has been a journey in just surrendering to asking and imagining and letting the Lord do infinitely and abundantly more than I can ask and imagine.
Yeah.
You know, when I first had the idea for Sanctuary Project, I felt like the Lord showed me that it wasn't going to be a small business,
mm-hmm.
that He wanted it to have massive impact. And so to try to steward that as someone who, I mean, I'm a high school dropout. I failed as a prostitute, you know, I mean, how do you steward that? You know, how do you go from the life I've had to running a kind of large business at this point? But the Lord's been so gracious, and this is where I've seen Him redeem even like those years as a drug dealer, right? Where it's like, I always understood margins. I've always understood supply and demand. I've always understood customer service. And so it's been really interesting to draw on some of those gifts and some of that training I even got as a drug dealer to say, okay, all right, so Target wants this. They need massive supply. How do I manufacture that? What do we need to do? How do we need to scale up to make this happen? But it's just incredible, and it's a door that only God could have opened. So the way it happened was really special. We have an agent we work with in New York who has helped us get into pop-up shops and maker communities, and they reached out to us last fall saying that they were in touch with a national retailer who wanted to come visit a few Austin companies just to understand the maker community in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they didn't tell us who that was, and so I was like, I mean, it could be anybody. Like, it could be, like, JCPenney or like 7-Eleven. I don't know.
Bucky's. Yeah, I guess it's only Texas.
Yeah. And so, but they did some interviewing of us, and then they told us that we were selected for this tour and that it was Target coming. And of course, like, my mind was blown, you know, and we did our best as a small little group of people to prepare for Target visiting our offices in East Austin. And the moment they walked in, they said, oh, it feels so special in here.
Mm-hmm.
And without saying it's Jesus, we knew that what they were feeling was just a spirit that we prayed into that place where lives are being healed and transformed. And they felt that, and they loved the line. They actually, we found out later, were not looking at bringing in any of the businesses they visited. They weren't looking for new brands to bring in. But the people who visited us were the president of sourcing and the VP of ethical sourcing. And they were so excited by what we're doing and just fell in love with our ladies so much and our mission so much that they went back to the team that manages Target's online sales and asked if they would be willing to bring us on. And so it's so incredible. I mean, we didn't have to pitch it. We didn't have to try. It just happened really effortlessly. And that's how you know it's God,
yeah,
right?
That's like the Holy Spirit. Just like,
yeah,
I got you.
Here. Here's a gift.
And I love that they're bringing in smaller companies like mm-hmm. this, because so often when we think of like ethical fashion and all of that, it's like it's either ethical fashion and these are the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so Target sometimes gets deemed the bad guys because they're a big box.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're bringing in ethical, like real life ethical lines is huge. It's that they're saying like, oh, this actually does matter.
Yeah, it's pretty special. And, you know, and I actually didn't even know they had a VP of ethical sourcing.
No.
But I've learned so much about their mission and their work in this time and what they've been doing to create an ethical sourcing line. And they're not going to tell you this, but I'll tell you, Target is working their butts off on ethical sourcing on the
love
back
that.
End. I mean, they have all kinds of fair trade acts in place with their factories. Okay. They, you know, they're committed to this work, and that's been really special to see. You know, the fashion industry is changing. Mm-hmm. It's no longer acceptable for people to even suspect that slaves could have made your clothes.
Yeah.
It's not okay anymore. We know too much. Our eyes have been opened to some of those horrors.
Yeah.
And so now it's a matter of, you know, all these big box stores catching up. And I love that Target's not just doing that on the back end with their factories, that they're doing it on the front end and saying, we're also going to partner with this brand that's doing this work.
That's so cool. I love that so much because it does matter, and fashion is changing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, like, I told you, I think I texted you right when my box came in, I put my earrings on, and you told me this actually comes from our shop.
Yeah.
So like I ordered it in New Braunfels from Target online, and it was shipped from Austin to me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I love even more that it's not coming from like Target. That's coming from you and your girls.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, that is the best, because that means it's even more hometown. It's even just a little bit sweeter.
Well, and ultimately the biggest thing is that it means we're able to employ more women.
Mm.
We've been able to grow so much already. I mean, we've only been on Target for a couple of weeks now, and yet we've seen our volume just massively increase. So we've been able to provide more hours to the women we already have on staff. We actually hired 2 women dedicated just to handle Target. And so we have just seen massive growth already from it, and it's only been a couple of weeks. And so you can imagine what this is going to do for us long term and for the women we employ. Ultimately, the more orders we're getting, the more women we can employ, and the more women can have an opportunity to escape a life of trafficking, violence, and addiction. And so for Target to partner with that and say, yes, you guys handle all the shipping and all the fulfillment so that you have more jobs to give, it's just incredible.
And that, again, just shows that they're not this big bad company, that they really do care about the little guys. And the fact that when women come into your shop and to work with Sanctuary Project, it means that they know that they're safe.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest things on It's Time for Coffee is that we're safe, loved, and never alone.
Yeah.
And that is so beautiful that you're doing that within your office. Like you said, they come in and they felt like this, like, Holy Spirit. They don't know it's the Holy Spirit, but they know that they felt like, oh, this feels
different. They felt safe. They felt loved. Target actually felt honored. You know, we had this sweet little welcome sign, and they were like, oh my gosh, like no one's ever done that for us before. Can we take a picture with it? And I was like, you visit these businesses and no one made a big sign saying welcome Target.
Come on.
Well, what kind of salespeople?
We really want you to like us.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love that so much. So the question that's like running through my brain, which is like a kind of a hard question to ask, but it's like, how do you continue to find women that want to work with you and for you? Like, it's kind of a like, it's not like you're just accepting job applications and on it. It's like, have you been set free from sex slavery? Like it's kind of a weird one to find, but you have created relationships. So do you have like a wait list, or like, this is like the weird side of my brain that I'm like, how do you do this part?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. God seems to send people in exactly the right timing.
Mm-hmm.
Right now we do have a backup of 2 or 3 women that I would love to give jobs to that I don't have a job for them right now. Hopefully we'll grow and I will. We've never had a shortage of women. We've only ever had a shortage of jobs.
Yeah.
And so that's a good thing in terms of, you know, we know we're having impact. And we know that there are women who need it. But it's also hard because it's like, it feels like there's an endless stream, unfortunately, of women who are coming out of this life, who need a second chance, who, you know, have a record and don't really have anywhere else to go. And if we're not taking them, I don't know who is.
Yeah.
And so I feel that sort of weight propelling me constantly of like, those girls are on my mind. They're on my heart. They're in a note in my phone, and I'm praying over it. And I'm like, okay, Lord, you've got to keep growing this thing because there are women who need this.
Mm.
And so it's been really interesting to just trust him to bring the right women at the right time. I surrendered to the idea of having an entirely survivor run staff about a year ago, and just decided at any point, if I have a job opening, whether that's marketing, operations, social media, I will pray a survivor into that role. And so we have done that. We've committed to doing that. And when we've needed to fill certain positions, we pray and trust that the Lord will send a survivor who actually has those skill sets. And that's worked so far. And sometimes he'll send us one in advance that has skill sets. And I'm like, we're going to need this in 6 months. We're going to need this in 3 months. And then they're on my radar already. And I know, okay, when the time comes, I can reach out and bring them in.
Mm, that's so smart. So good. Healing is often very nonlinear. Mm. And so as you bring women in, do you find that it sometimes stirs up your own wounds from the past, or how has God really delivered you? I think that's a good word.
Yes.
True.
Oh, so true. Trauma reveals trauma.
Yeah.
And it's been a really interesting journey, because I would have said when I started Sanctuary Project that I was starting it from the place of a whole healed individual who had been redeemed and was ready to offer that redemptive love to other women walking out. Today, I would say that depending on the day, the moment, the hour, I'm in as much need of their ministry to me as they are my ministry to them. You know, I tell my story a lot, and every time I tell my story, there's this little part of me that just this little scab that gets ripped off, right? And I'm raw and I'm exposed, and it's a constant re-triggering, re-traumatization, being reminded. I'm often reminded of parts of my story I've forgotten, because it'll come out in a conversation. Right. And the same thing happens daily, you know, at Sanctuary Project, because a woman will come in and share a piece of her story with me. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, me too. I had forgotten that. Yes, I did that too. Or, you know, so I think there's as much as there is this spirit of our healed parts helping to heal our sisters heal, you know, our sisters' broken parts.
Yeah.
There's also a way in which our traumas can trigger each other's traumas.
Yeah.
You know, it's really interesting when 2020 hit, when COVID hit, because we got to see what happens when a bunch of trauma survivors get fearful and have their security threatened.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was like, oh gosh, I don't know if our small business can weather this. Like, how do I steer this ship? And I started having massive anxiety and fear and overwhelming, just hopelessness, right? And needed to still steer the ship and lead. But I was leading from this very broken place in those moments, and they felt that. And then their security, you know, their trauma responses got triggered, and each one had their own, you know. For one person, it was like walls went up and she got mean. For another person, it was like fear came up and she got, you know, wanted to flee, like that fight or flight, you know? And so for each of us, it was just this different journey of trying to figure out, how do we come together as a sisterhood, as a community, and walk through these things together and have grace for each other? On any given moment, one of us might be weak when another is strong, and another could be strong when another's weak, and we can actually lean on each other, but it takes time to develop that trust. And so part of my journey as a leader has been leading that ship. Mm-hmm. As much as I'm leading a product business and doing wholesale deals and, you know, trying to scale this thing and get the word out there about it, I'm also leading a ship that is this delicate balance of trying to care for wounded souls and trying to minister and pastor these ladies and make sure they feel safe. Because when they feel safe, it's their trauma can come up and it can be addressed and then be rid of, instead of, you know, being shut down and locked inside. But we do see that once they're safe, that their trauma comes up, right? Like as soon as someone feels safe, often I'll start to see like all their sort of character defects and sin come up, and I'm like, okay, good, she feels safe.
Yeah. Okay, we checked that
and
one.
Now let's address this.
Yeah. We see that with Zoe sometimes, where like every once in a while she'll hit a milestone all of a sudden where I'm like, oh, we're going to test boundaries again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's really common in adoption, right? Because
they're
constantly needing to feel safe to have more come up and be dealt with. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very interesting to me. And I was just thinking, I was looking at your earrings while you were talking about that, about like the safety. And I just think there's a beautiful analogy of you have girls linking arms with one another, but you also have them linking jewelry pieces with one another. So you have this like linking. I see you as like this anchor, and then just like everybody just kind of flows with you. And I think without your steadfast leadership and your steadfast love in Christ for others, you're loving literally like Christ all day, every day, that it wouldn't ebb and flow as beautifully as it does. So
I love that. Yeah, I do see the jewelry as this prophetic picture of what we're doing. We have a line called our Chain Breaker Collection, which is just all chains. And And it was like physically hard to cut the chain. Like when we got in, you know, we got this chain in and it was so thick. It was like, oh my gosh, it's like hard. It was like hurting all our hands. Yeah. And we were like, okay, this is
sore
a prophetic
muscles.
Picture. Yeah, this is a picture of what this work is like. It's hard to break these chains. And, you know, it's hard to get those loops just right. Mm-hmm. You know, we work with these little jump rings on the jewelry. It's hard to get them closed just right so that the earring is secure. That takes time. It takes patience. Yeah. And yeah, there is so much prophetic picture in what we're doing, creating together.
I love that. And I just think about like Jesus, like break every chain.
Yeah.
Break. And it's like, oh, well, the fact that he can do it so beautifully and the fact that we just get to say like, Lord, just break the chain. Like I'll hold on to you as tight as I can. Just break the chain. Like it's so beautiful.
And then we make beautiful things. And the end of it, it's like all day long, we make beautiful things.
I remember listening to you on a podcast and you said that very thing. We make beautiful things. And the song that came into my head was, a song called like
you make me
yes
things.
Oh yes, I'm gonna listen to that on my way home.
I
today
love that.
Such a beautiful song.
Yeah.
Okay,
she'll link it in the show notes.
Yes, absolutely. We won't sing it for you. I mean, you can, I won't. The last question I ask everybody now is, because it's time for coffee, because we believe there's a time for everything under the sun, what is it time for right now?
I think right now it's time to trust that the Lord knows where we're going. I'm such a control freak, I think, when it comes to running this business and this ministry. And at this point, I've had to really surrender a lot of that because it's gone further than I thought I could ever take it. And so now it's time to trust that he has a different plan, that he has a bigger plan than I can imagine. And I have to step back and let him steer because it's gone into waters I can't weather. And so it's exciting. It's like a surrender to just say like, okay, Lord, I need you to be CEO.
Yeah.
I'm going to step down.
Yeah.
I'll be your VP,
yeah.
But I need you to lead this thing. And I need to trust that you've got it and that you care far more for these women's lives than I ever could.
Mm-hmm. Oh, amen. One more little note that I have for you, just because I feel like I'm just like fangirling you the whole time. But I love that you walk this journey with girls who help you, yet you are so intentionally not exploiting them because that's what they came out of.
Mm-hmm.
And so you partner alongside them, you work with them, you live with them, but you don't exploit them in their work. You just say, yeah, we're doing good work together.
Yeah. You'll never hear their stories.
Yeah.
You know, they're sacred to me and I probably protect them more than they even want to be. There was a podcast we were offered to be on as a group recently and they were like, yeah, let's do it. It didn't end up working out to do it as a group, but they're ready, you know, like in some ways they're like, let us come out from the shadows and like tell our stories and talk about what it's like working here. But I'm so protective because I know what it feels like to have that wound
opened up
constantly. And I'm 20 years out. Some of these girls are 3 years out, or I mean, one of them's like 12 years out. And so maybe she would be more ready for it. But, you know, and some of them are 6 months out. Some of them are a year out. And I just know, I know what it could do to them to be exposed in those ways. And, I just want them to have so much dignity and be making choices for their own life. And, I'm like a mom, protective mama.
Yeah.
Protective mama bird, for
I love
sure.
It. I think, and you do it so well.
Aww,
so,
thank
Holly, thanks for hanging out. Thanks for this coffee.
Out. Let's go play with the cows now.
Oh my gosh, yes. Okay, bye, friends. Oh my gosh, yes. I really hope that today's conversation encouraged you. Holly is so great, and our time together encouraged me in my heart more than I could even tell you. I hope that you'll head to Target.com and shop Sanctuary Project now. Get some great gifts for all those women in your life. Happy Thanksgiving, friends. See you next week. Thanks so much for joining me for coffee today. I hope that we're already friends on social media, but if we aren't, come find me on Instagram at Jeanette Tapley or on Facebook at The Jeanette Tapley. If you have any questions about the show or what's coming up, be sure to check out itstimeforcoffeepod.com. I hope you have a great week, and I can't wait to see you back here next week when it'll be time for coffee. Bye, friend.
This show is part of the Converge Podcast Network.